This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, my guest today is not in Florida. She is in Michigan. And I am very happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper an author who was here, almost when I first started the program, and that's 2 years. I'm coming up to my second anniversary, and I'm so happy to welcome back Jody Hedlund for her new book called For Love and Honor. Hi, Jody.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, it's so good to talk to you. I know last time, you know, we talked, and I mentioned that I'm a youper, and that I love coffee, and of course you love coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for a coffee sponsor. I need a coffee sponsor. I go through so much coffee. I need to find a sponsor who will send me free samples all the time. So how are things up in Michigan?
We are very, very windy today. We're probably getting in on the tail end of some of that violent weather that kind of came through the Midwest yesterday, but warm, and actually unseasonably warm. We're used to much, much colder temperatures this time of year. So I'm not complaining, though.
No, don't complain. Well, my brother's complaining. My brother is in the Upper Peninsula, of course, and in Pelkey, and he is complaining that it is too hot. He cannot stand anything above 50 degrees, and there's not enough snow. And he dreams of his perfect winter was the winter of 78. Wherein there were 355 inches of snow.
Oh, boy, yeah. Well, it is hard for those who love to ski. My family is actually out skiing today, and they're a little disappointed that there's not a ton of snow, but thankfully most of the ski places here make their own, so as long as they can keep doing that, they can ski. So,
yeah, because it has been warm, and So
yeah,
but no. So the family's away. So you're probably writing in between everything else you're doing. You are very prolific, and it's really wonderful. The new book is called For Love and Honor, and it's part of a series, right? How many are in that series now?
Right. Well, the series starts off with a novella, which is ebook only. And it's a very short novella, but it kind of introduces the first character in the first book and the premise of the series. And then it's the very first full-length novel in this series is called An Uncertain Choice. And then A Daring Sacrifice is the second book, which released last March. And now the final book in the series is For Love and Honor. And each of the three novels in this series centers around a particular knight, and each of the knights are friends and have grown up together, and so they each get their own story and each get their own happily ever after.
And we should say that this book is set in 1391.
Right.
That's a long time ago.
In the Middle Ages, right?
And how did you get so interested in the Middle Ages?
Well, I have always loved fairy tales and castles and knights and daring damsels. And so I wanted to set something in that time period and kind of settled on a time that is more fantasy-like and fairy tale than actual historical. But I had to set on a certain time period so that I could be accurate in the type of armor and the type of weapons and the type of food and dress and hairstyles and all of that. So 1391 is what I kind of picked for this series that ties all of those historical details together. But actually, the series is is somewhat fantastical or fairy tale-ish in some regards as well. So not an actual, you know, all of the events of this time period pulled in, but the historical accuracy is what we were shooting for, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And the series is geared really for young adult, correct? Although I think adults will enjoy it just as much because...
Absolutely, right. Yes, I'm hearing from lots of my adult readers who are saying things like, oh, it's geared for teens, but this adult reader loved it, you know, that kind of a thing. So I think it can span across all ages, actually.
Well, I think it does. You're never too old for a love story, and it is a love story. So tell us a little bit about Sir Bennet and your hero in the story, and Lady Sabine. How do you pronounce it?
Lady Sabine.
Sabine, we're saying.
Yeah, Sabine.
Uh-huh. Lady Sabine. Okay.
Right. Sir Bennet and Lady Sabine are the two main characters in this story. And Lady Sabine is hiding in a blemish, a kind of a port-colored stain on her arm, a birthmark. And in those times, those kinds of blemishes were looked at with such curiosity and almost suspicion. And at times, people who had deformities or birthmarks were even considered to be marked by the devil. And so she's very afraid to show anyone this birthmark, not just because of the implications, but because she's very self-conscious of her appearance. And so she's on her way to what she thinks is an art-buying expedition, but her grandmother has arranged for her to meet Sir Bennet. And he is in desperate straits because his brother, his older brother and heir to his estate, has gambled away their family fortune. And all of the neighboring lords have come to collect the debts that need to be paid. And Sir Bennet needs to come up with the money very, very quickly. And so agrees to the plan of an arranged marriage with Lady Sabine. But of course, Lady Sabine doesn't realize that's what's being cooked up by her grandmother. And so the two are in for a surprise in each other and working through a lot of misunderstanding and along the way, of course, learning what really matters most is what's in someone's heart, not what's on the outside.
Exactly. And now the story is... It is very touching. As I was reading it, I was thinking, oh, this is really cute, and I like the interaction between the two of them. And it's, you know, I love a story where you learn something and you've woven in some interesting things about the Middle Ages. What did you find the most surprising in your research about the Middle Ages?
Well, there are really a lot of unusual things that happen in the Middle Ages, really. So many fascinating things from the various things that people ate into. I was just researching yesterday about people eating lamprey and, just various diseases and the plague and siege warfare, as well as they're very superstitious during this time period and look so critically at almost everything. And so there were so many fascinating things, which is one of the reasons why it's so fun to write during this time period, because it's just filled with so many plot lines that a writer can pull from, the danger and the disease and all of that is just oozing for a story. So I find myself always full of so many ideas and so many things that I can utilize as I'm plotting. So it's very fun. That's one of the reasons I really enjoy this time period.
Well, I think it comes through in your writing that you're really enjoying the process. You enjoy the story and sharing a lot with your readers.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, of course, you are the winner of the 2016 Christian Book Award for fiction and the Christie Award for historical romance. So how much does it mean to you that you imbue Christian ideas in your stories, but that you maintain a certain level of writing that does not get too far afield? Because sometimes in historical, there are historical fiction that goes way overboard, if you ask me. And so I really like that this is a very clean type of book.
Yeah. Well, it is really a tricky balance as a Christian writer to weave in faith elements without becoming preachy. And it is, obviously, it will vary from book to book exactly how much of a faith element to weave in. But the Middle Ages actually lend themselves very, very well to having a faith aspect, because that was a very religious time. And so it's not unusual for most people during the Middle Ages to pray or go to chapel or to draw comfort from God in a historical context. And so it's easier as a writer to kind of intertwine all of that inherent faith. But on the other hand, I do always strive to have some kind of spiritual or character growth that each of my main characters must wrestle through during the course of the story. And so I start off by giving each of my characters, main characters, flaws or a weakness that is kind of holding them back from who they can really be. And as the story progresses, then they have to wrestle through that spiritual issue or that character issue so that they don't necessarily end up perfect, but they've worked through that hardship, that difficulty, and come out stronger on the other end. And so that's how I go about weaving in truths and messages, hopefully not too preachy, but yet strong enough that people can catch that message and it's not just blending in with everything else, but comes out.
Well, I think you do an admirable job, because it is exactly that. One doesn't feel that you're preaching anything, but it's the story takes over. The story just takes over. The romance takes over, and I think it's a very, very nicely developed characters that that readers will enjoy. Now, who are your favorite historical authors of fiction?
Well, I actually have a confession to make. I don't read a lot of historical fiction anymore. I guess because I am steeped in writing it, I have found that when I am too immersed in the historical genre, that I tend to compare myself and often get bogged down with what other people are doing. And so over recent years, I tend to not read as much historical fiction, although I do really love a couple of authors like Susanna Kearsley, for example. She's not a Christian author, but writes very clean, sort of split-time historical with contemporary aspect, and I've enjoyed that. I do still really enjoy, like, Lynn Austin, for example, and there are a few others like her that don't feel quite as historical as what I'm doing, but I do mostly read contemporary, and I read a lot of YA, fantasy, so just a wide, eclectic, a lot of different books that I tend to read, so I it's just one of those things that I've realized over the years. I'm not good at reading so deeply in the genre that I'm writing anymore because of the comparison aspect.
Well, that's probably a good idea. There was a time when I was absolutely, I couldn't stop reading historical fiction. It was just like, I needed to read it all, you know, and I just, then for several years I didn't. And then now I'm back to really enjoying historical fiction because I'm finding more and more that when I talk to people, and it's what I like when you, it is geared towards younger adults, that it is a way for them to learn something without understanding that they're being taught something. Because it's just so fascinating how when you take a subject and you weave a story around it and all of this knowledge comes, you know, subliminally to the reader.
Absolutely. Right. A series of my books that does that, that's just a little step away from For Love and Honor in this medieval series, are my biofiction, which most recently I wrote a book about John Newton, the slave trader, and his romantic relationship with the love of his life, Polly Catlett. And that released with Waterbrook Random House in October. And that is a fascinating story, powerful, moving. He, you know, came out of the slave trade and wrote Amazing Grace. And perfect example of what you're saying, where you're learning all sorts of historical details and accurate time period things while reading this interesting and powerful story.
Well, exactly. I think that's, it's such a gift to readers that they have this, all of these books that, and there are so many writers like you. I know you're quite prolific and you do your research, and when you put in the history, it's nice that, you know, you work to make it as accurate as possible so that it will, maybe the reader will say, oh, I want to know a little bit more about that. I want to study that era. I want to understand those people. And I think that is so, just such a wonderful gift to readers.
Absolutely. It sure is.
Well, we have, I don't know, have you ever been down here to Clearwater? Everybody from Michigan comes to Clearwater. Have you?
I have not, no.
Well, you know,
I haven't been down there.
Our streets are so crowded. I almost hate driving around now because, you know, we have these months where we have the snowbirds down here, and we have so many people from Michigan. Every day I'm behind a car from Michigan, and, you know, I see the license plate. And and it's so wonderful. And one of the wonderful things we have here in Clearwater, we had one of the most fantastic hotels, the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel, which was just an amazing structure, and where presidents used to come, movie stars used to come to this hotel, and it was so beautiful. And of course, development comes along and they knock this hotel down, which it's really a heartbreaking way. If you had ever been to this hotel where afternoon tea was so elegant and the everything was just so beautiful in this hotel, and they knocked it down. And I am so grateful that one of a local woman, when she realized that they were going to be knocking it down, she started literally haunting the hotel, going into every, I mean, really just, it was still open, but she knew that the days were numbered, and she started going in, taking photographs of everything. She went into hidden places where nobody else had been for years. She opened doors that had been locked. She actually did some of the stuff she did, I don't think she was supposed to do. She crawled into all sorts of places and took photos. And then she wrote three books. Again, she used the novel format to bring the story of this marvelous hotel to life. And I am so happy that she has done this, because everything would be forgotten. Everything would have been lost. But because of her being very clever, her name is Bonsu Branvik. Now, her stories are basically from the time the hotel was built in the late 1800s through to just a few months ago, where they actually saved the lobby of the hotel. That's all they say. And they put it on one of those things, platforms, and they moved it. and they save the lobby. But the hotel's gone. They just demolished it, and they're going to have condos there. But Bonsu Brandvik wrote three books, a trilogy, about the hotel. And if you want a really good read, those you would enjoy because they're not Middle Ages, and you will learn something about Clearwater and about our wonderful hotel here. That's something that I highly recommend to everybody to read. And, you know, I think your books are wonderful, very nicely done, very, very well written. And what I always get when I read your books is that you're having fun. I always feel that, boy, Jody's having fun writing these books. You know,
I do. I'm very passionate about each story as I'm writing it, and just immerse myself into the story and lock away the editor, you know, that little internal editor that tries to come out and nitpick as you're writing. I've gotten very good at locking the editor away and just allowing the story to come out. And then once it's done, pulling the editor out, well, unlocking the key and letting it come out, and it does a lot of damage when it does come out, but good damage. It goes through and hacks away and shapes that story into what it needs to be.
And then, of course, you lock the kids out and the cats. How many kids and how many cats do you have around the house now?
Well, I have five children. My oldest is in college, and I have twins who are graduating from high school this year. So in some ways, I'll be half empty by next year with three of the five in college. And I have five cats, and they are just a lot of fun and a joy, and my kids call me the crazy cat lady, but that's okay. Yep.
Well,
keeps me very busy, but I do make sure to set aside time to write and prioritize that every day. And as you said, I'm prolific and constantly working on a variety of projects and just love it.
And you have a nice you have a nice web page. Tell everyone your web page.
I will. Thanks so much, Patsy.
Oh no, well, what is your web page address?
My web page address is Jody Hudland. It's JodyHedlund .com. JodyHedlund.com.
JodyHedlund.com. It's a very nice web page, and everybody can go there and see all of the books that you've written. And definitely, you know, the nice thing about For Love and Honor, it's a standalone book, so you don't have to read all of them, you know, before to enjoy this one. But I do always recommend that people, it's wonderful, isn't it, on the internet that you can go back and start at the beginning of a series.
Absolutely, yes. And they all have discussion guides and questions at the end of the book, and are great for small groups or for moms and daughters or for mentors with their teams or...
Yes, I was going to mention that about your books. I like that you have these study guides at the back. They're perfect for book reading groups, and you are, well, it also shows that you are one of these people who are very organized, and it's cute. I love it. Okay, so I think we've lost Jody, but I just wanted to add that her books are delightful, and they are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and wherever books are sold. And so I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, I'm going to be talking to a writer who's written a book without too many words in it. But it's a fun book, and so we'll be back in a few minutes.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I am back with my guest, Robert Alexander. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
Okay, great. I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper to talk about your fantastic book called Vanished Splendor, The Colorful World of the Romanovs. And it is actually not colorful because it is a coloring book and the reader has to do the work.
It is an adult coloring book exploring the last reign of the Tsars, Nicholas II, Nicholas and Alexandra, and we have taken many colorful images and redrawn them in black and white, waiting for the adult colorist to take a stab at it.
Well, it is beautifully done, and I am so eager to start coloring, and I've been looking at it for the past several days, and I just, what a wonderful collection of pictures that you've taken. Some of course are of places and some are of the people, but what I was really touched by were you've taken some of the children's drawings, some of the Tsar's children's drawings, and turned them into coloring pages.
Thank you for getting that, because that was one of the most touching things to me about the book, too. The royal children at that time were encouraged to learn many languages and to play piano and also do artwork. And we found I found coloring the original watercolors, and then the artist I worked with, Christopher Bonet, redrew them in black and white, took out all the color, of course. And it's quite striking because it puts such a real face, a real experience on Anastasia or Alexei, the heir to the throne, the hemophiliac boy.
Yes, it is delightful. When I looked at Anastasia's drawing, which was so cute, and I was thinking about her, it just touches your heart.
It's kind of a fun. It's a little bit of a childish drawing, and for an adult coloring book, it probably shouldn't be in there, but it's so touching. It's a black and white drawing of her watercolor of her sitting on a stool, and her sister said, well, that you might like it, but to me it looks like a pig sitting on a donkey. Yeah.
Well, that's what big sisters say. But it is delightful. And any adult who is coloring in this book will enjoy doing that one, I think, most particularly.
I hope so. There's some other great ones in the back. There, Belevin was a great graphic artist of the time, and I really enjoy his work. He sort of combined historical Russian styles with Art Nouveau style to create these fantastic, to illustrate fantastic folk tales of old Russia.
Well, of course, let's talk a little bit about what inspired you to do this. Well, I want to mention one of the ones that I really enjoy. It's the menu from the coronation festivities.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is so beautiful, and I love the menu. Shrimp bisque, pierogi, natural Finnish trout, and since I'm Finnish, that really touches me. Veal with root vegetables, cold aspic, young spring hen salad, artichokes with spring peas, warm sweets, ice cream, and dessert. Wow. I love this.
To polish you off. Yeah.
That's it. I think I have to recreate that menu one day for a party. But of course, you are, I have to tell everyone, that you don't just do coloring books. You have, are, of course, the writer of many, many books, but one of the best of your books is The Kitchen Boy, which is an amazing book. And we'll talk about that in a minute, because I want to just know how you became so inspired. Well, of course, your name's Alexander, so there must be is there a Russian connection here to the Romanovs?
Actually, I'm half Scottish and half German. There isn't, but, you know, the fall of the Nicholas and Alexandra is so mythological. It's so much to be learned from it, because you have the fall of the richest family on the face of the earth that had 7 imperial palaces and 15,000 servants, and live so lavishly, and yet we're close as a family. And then, you know, within a few short months, they're in Siberia in exile, and then soon thereafter, taken down in a basement and executed, all 7 of them. And it's we're always fascinated by the fall of kings. And that's what Shakespeare said, in fact, fall of kings is but fodder for the entertainments. So I got interested in that story, that fall of that family, and started studying Russian, and I started, eventually went to Leningrad University, and then I worked in the Soviet Union for the State Department, and then later on had a very successful business with a Russian friend in St. Petersburg. But, you know, so much of Russian history, Russian culture is expressed graphically, and I think that's just by exploring all all of the books and all the images, that's how I came up with the idea.
Well, it is a fantastic idea, and it is a book. I think that any adult, and it's such a popular thing now to do these coloring. As a matter of fact, they have coloring parties at many of the libraries around here, where people go and sit, and it's a great way to get together with people, and not to be isolated by yourself, and to do that. And I will highly recommend this. I'm going to go around to the libraries here and suggest that they get this book, because it is the type of coloring that you're not only just coloring, you're also learning. And I love all your little, you have at the bottom of every picture, you explain what's going on. And I think this will help people to get interested in learning more about Russia. I mean, we're not, like, Russia is in the news constantly.
All the time.
All the time. And it would be so great for people to understand Russia better, to understand the Russian people. Of course, the best way is the way you've done it, to really immerse yourself in Russia. But it helps for people to put a perspective on what Russia is, and maybe to try to understand the Russian psyche, what they were before, what they are today, and what sort of went in between.
Right. Well, I mean, it is, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and that's what we wanted to try and pick up in the coloring book. It's just their lives and their menus, as you said. And I think exploring a society, a country artistically is a way to get to its heart and soul.
And this was the age that you cover, which is called the Silver Age of Russia, that period there at the turn of the century, when Russia was changing from being imperialistic and all of the changes that were about to come with revolutions, with some of the changes, maybe you wonder if there was ever any hope for the imperial family, because did they ever recognize that the changes that needed to be made?
Well, I mean, I think there was great hope, and, you know, I mean, it's a very interesting question. I mean, Russia until 1861 had serfdom, and that essentially affected, 50 to 60% of the population was owned by their masters. And so then by the time you get to the year 1900, which is 1896 in that area, is sort of the beginning of the Silver Age, you had this massive population leaving the farms to which they had been enslaved, essentially, coming to the cities and building, you know, these huge factories and huge, you know, industries. And the culture was really in a huge transition. It's an interesting dichotomy, because I think royals often are kept separate and out of touch with reality, and I think Nicholas and Alexandra were out of touch with reality. But the society beneath them was roiling with change. There was the great musicians like Tchaikovsky, Stravinsky, Rimsky, Korsakov, wonderful painters, Malevich, Kandinsky, Rippen, that were pushing the boundaries of art. By then they were, believing that representational art was no longer the art that should be the standard, but the emotional art, the theoretical art is what they wanted to explore. So all of this stuff was roiling along and change was coming. And in 1900, we had 90% illiteracy rate in the United States, where they had 91% illiteracy rate. So a lot of this stuff was explored, a lot of the information, a lot of the culture was explored graphically via pictures that could be understood by the person who could not read. And I think they would have made it. There was a revolution in 1905 where Nicholas ceded some of his power and the Duma, the parliament, was established. It was well on its way to becoming a constitutional monarchy like in England. But then along came World War One, and with the food shortages and the massive deaths at the front, you know, I think revolution was sort of all but inevitable, unfortunately.
Well, it is such an important period in history. And, of course, you've done it through this book, and then also through your book called The Kitchen Boy, which I understand is going to be made into a major motion picture.
We can only hope so. It's coming along. It's taken a while to get there. It's so complex to get a film made.
Oh, it is. It is. Having done 12 screenplays, I know the problem of, first of all, when a book is picked up by Hollywood, it goes through many hands. And this is one of the things that happens. And, of course, writing the screenplay also usually goes through many hands. But I do hope that it is made, because, again, you tell the story of the royal family, the imperial family at the end, from the point of view of a kitchen boy, of a boy who is there, and we see all of the events through his eyes.
Well, I'm always fascinated by, in writing a book, who's going to be the camera, who's going to be the storyteller, the observer, and there was a kitchen boy, and not many people realize that. Yeah, under house arrest with Nicholas and Alexandra and their five children, the seven Romanovs altogether, there were an additional five servants. And the 12th servant, the youngest one, was the kitchen boy, who actually existed and was with them until just a few hours before they were executed. And so in my book, The Kitchen Boy, he tells the story, what he saw, what it was like to be with them in the last year. And essentially, you know, we're all fascinated by the fall of kings, by the fall of the mighty, from, you know, Elizabeth the First to Charles the Second to Martha Stewart and all these people who have this everything they want and then make a mistake and and fall. And what does that teach us about humanity? What does that teach us about our own lives? And so I think that's been the popularity of that book. And we're inching along. The screenplay has been written for The Kitchen Boy by Sir Ronald Harwood, who did The Pianist and The Diving Bell and The Butterfly and Quartet. And the cast is now being lined up. So
well,
it's all good.
It is all good. And I think it's going to be fascinating. And I always tell people that, really one of the best ways to learn history is to read novels that take you back to those times. And then I've always found that, you know, if I read a novel, then I want to check on the history and I want to know more. And I think the coloring book can lead people to want to know more. And if they read The Kitchen Boy, and then a recent book that I also recommend is A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles, which, again, covers that period after the revolution. And talks about, you know, what it was like in Russia. And, of course, that's also a fantastic book.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I think that fiction is another facet of history. And, you know, what I did in The Kitchen Boy is take their diaries and turn them into dialogue. And a historian can't do that. But you can do that in historical fiction. I mean, writers lie for a living, and that's what I did. I just made up stories that made up the story around that story. And I think it's another way to get to the greater truth of that situation in that time. And I hope that Vanished Splendor will be to go along that same path. It's just another way to cross a bridge to get more interested in things Russian and into a deeper understanding of things Russian.
Exactly. That's why I highly recommend this book. It's called, as we said, Vanished Splendor, The Colorful World of the Romanovs by Robert Alexander, and the illustrations are by Christopher Bonnet. Right?
You got it. Perfect.
Okay. And it's available wherever books are sold, and it's just been done so beautifully. And I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. And I hope that you'll come back and we can talk more about The Kitchen Boy because, as I said, I think it's a wonderful way for people to learn more about Russia, which is a subject that we need to know more about and try to understand. And so, again, I wish you the best of luck. I know it will make a wonderful film. And I will talk to you also. I know that you've written some thrillers under a pen name. And so we'll have you back on the Joy on Paper so that we can talk about all of your writing, okay?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much. And you can get more information about me or see some of the images of Vanished Splendor on my website, robertalexanderbooks.com.
Okay. Well, I will put that also on my website so people can connect to you. And I want to thank you again so much, Robert Alexander, for being on my program today.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay, well, this is Pat Z with a Z, but that's all right. It was fun to talk to Robert. And as I said, this coloring book is really fun. So if you know anyone who likes to color, and it is a nice thing to do, get this book. It's called Vanished Splendor. Now, I want to talk to all of you writers out there who have self-published your books. The Writer's Digest Self-Published Book Awards is coming up. The deadline is April 3rd. Now, I know there are so many of you who are have your books up at the Miami Avenue Book Nook. You've self-published. Now you have to make that next step and get out there and win some awards. And you can't do better than the Writer's Digest Self-Published Book Awards. You get $8,000 cash. You get a feature article about you. They do press releases. And you even get a paid trip to the Writer's Digest Conference. So, and even if you don't win the first prize, there are lots and lots of second prizes and third prizes and even honorable mentions. And that is just another thing that you need to promote your book. You have to remember that selling your book is a business, and you have to put some effort and you have to put some money into it. Now, the Writer's Digest contest is the best that you can get, and you know that you're going to get treated properly. Your book will be read by people who are in the publishing world. And I mean, one thing always, when you are looking to enter a contest, you have to make sure that it is a legitimate contest. There are contests sometimes that will come on the web, and often self-published authors will get emails and from people, from companies that say, you know, give us $500 and we will enter you in a contest. That those aren't legitimate. Writer's Digest contest is real. It costs $25 for the first entry, $20 for the second one, except for poetry. Poetry is a little cheaper, I guess, because they're usually shorter. I think it's $15, but it is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to get read by people who know what they're doing. So it's available. You go to writersdigest.com and look for the Writer's Digest Self-Published Book Awards. That is with a deadline of April 3rd. Now, they have for unpublished authors, for if your work isn't published yet, they have the regular annual contest, which has a deadline in May. So that gives you time. If you have not published your book, you can enter that one. But if you published it, enter the Self-Published Book Awards. It doesn't matter how long ago it was published. It might have been published 3-4 years ago. It doesn't matter. You can submit it for review. And please let me know if any of you enter it. And, of course, if you win anything, even an honorable mention, which, as I said, when you get an honorable mention from Writer's Digest, that's pretty great. I will have you back on my program so you can talk about it. Because, you know, when you're working so hard to promote your book, every little advantage means something. And so if you can put on your Amazon page that you've won this award or that award, it helps. And it lifts you up in sort of the ratings world of publishing. And it will get you noticed. So I really recommend this contest. Of all the contests out there, this is probably the best one. And also so inexpensive. So do have a look at that. And I'm talking specifically, there are some of you out there, and you know who you are, like Gino and Tim and Rita, and a few of you others out there who are self-published, Bonsu. Enter your books. You know, you have nothing to lose but $25. And but even that, you know, you don't lose, because really what you're doing, what happens is when you start focusing on, I always found people who, when they focus on entering a contest, really start focusing on their sales. And that's what you have to do. All of you have to have a game plan. It's not enough just to write your book, self-publish it, and then wait for somebody to buy it. You have to have a game plan. And I have talked to some very successful indie published authors who set a goal, and they might say they're going to sell 50 books this month. They might say they're going to sell 100 books. I know one author who said, you know, she looked at how much money she needed in order to support herself and her kids. This was after she had a rough divorce and found herself with nothing and living in a garage. And she said, well, I can't go on like this. I need to have so much money. And so she said, I need to sell, at the time, it's like 4 or 5 years ago, she said, I needed to sell 400 books. That if I sold 400 books, I would have enough money to pay for rent and food for the kids. And she did it. Now, in the beginning, it was very difficult, but what she did, and one of the things that you have to do, is join groups, make friends, find opportunities to get out there and speak at events. Sometimes you speak at small events, sometimes big events, but wherever you can. And if you do set yourself a goal, as you say, I'm going to sell 400 books this month, even if you have to, you know, sell them in flea markets or sell them at, you know, the put a table up at one of the weekend markets, you can do it if you set your goal. And so I hope that it will inspire you to think about how you are going to get out there and sell your book. Of course, the ideal thing would be to win the Writer's Digest Self-Published Book Awards, and then they will help you get your name out there and get you noticed by publishers and by literary agents who hopefully will pick you up. And of course, as happened with Nancy Peacock, who was on my show not too long ago, her book, which she published in 2013, she made almost no sales. It was picked up recently, and now Nancy Peacock is going to be, I think she just about is hitting the best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author list. So it all depends on what happens and how much you're willing to go out there and promote your book. Now, I'm very excited that on Thursday I have Forbes Riley is going to be on the program, and she is just so inspirational and such a wonderful, wonderful woman. And I am just so enthusiastic about her. Of course, she's famous for being on HSN, but she's also very inspirational, and she's just fun. And she was, it's so funny when you look at her today, and she's so beautiful. And she talks about how she was not a very cute little girl and just a bookworm. And she grew up into a major, major talent. And so it's just wonderful that I'm going to have her on. And then, of course, next Tuesday, Margaret George is going to be here to talk about her latest book, which, of course, I'm sure is almost, well, it will be one of those instant bestsellers. It will hit the top of the list on the day that it comes out, because her books always do. Henry VIII, Elizabeth, she writes just such beautiful historical novels. So, and remember, I love historical novels. It was fun to talk to Jody Hedlund today. Check out her website and read one of her books. And then, of course, be ready to buy. If you haven't already pre-ordered Margaret George's book, pre-order it and just be ready for a wonderful interview with her, because she's a delightful person. And always very enthusiastic to help other writers. As a matter of fact, she gave a wonderful review for Robert Alexander's book, and I'm very eager to talk to her about that too. So meanwhile, just enjoy your day, and tonight is karaoke night at the Miami Avenue Wine Bar, and it is fun. If you have not been to one of their karaoke nights, this is the night to go. It's just fun, a wonderful crowd. Wonderful wines and just a wonderful and beautiful atmosphere. One of the nicest places in town to spend an evening. So be back here on Thursday at 11 o'clock right here, and we will be talking to Forbes Riley. And meanwhile, find your joy and share it and say something nice to somebody today, and I'll say something nice to Big Ed in the control room and thank him for everything he does for me. And just be happy. That's what you can do. Just be happy. Bye for now.